If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. The following police report describes a crime that occurred in Gary, Indiana on August 18, 2014. The events described in this report initiated a sequence of events that have the potential to unravel the mystery of who murdered Liz, Sheila, Amp, Angela, and Suzanne 13 years earlier. Here's the narrative from the report. Quote, Officers C. Taylor, J. Sheets, and Jay Bliss were dispatched to 1415 East 36th Avenue for a report of a man down in the front yard. Officers arrived on scene and saw a black male in the yard with black shorts, a black t-shirt, black socks, and black and red Jordan gym shoes. The black male had been shot multiple times in the body, hand, and leg area. The black male's head was facing south and his feet were facing north. Prompt medics Maryville No. 2 arrived on scene with medics Taryn Strange and Jeremy Caliz. Prompt medics then assessed the scene and transported the male to 600 Grant Street. The unknown male was later identified by his driver's license as Gerald Matthews. Gerald Matthews, date of birth February 7, 1977, was pronounced dead at 11:42 p.m. by Northlake Methodist ER staff. Thirteen years after the quintuple homicide that we've been investigating, a man named Gerald Matthews was gunned down on 36th Avenue, about 5 miles southeast of the crime scene that we've been discussing for all these months. As far as anyone knew at the time, the two cases, over a decade apart, were entirely unrelated. And in a way, they were. But as it turns out, a few weeks before he was killed, Gerald made some arrangements. He left instructions in a package with a friend. Something she needed to do for him if something were to happen to him, like being murdered. About 2 months after Gerald's murder, Chris Bynum's appellate attorney, Fran Watson, received a yellow envelope at her office via certified mail. The package had been shipped from a Peru, Indiana post office on October 11th. The return address on the envelope said it was mailed by a Melissa Williams who lived in Indianapolis, Indiana. The package contained three items: a handwritten affidavit, a Motorola cell phone, and this typed letter.
Dear Fran Watson, I got these items from Gerald Matthews before his death. He asked that if things went bad from a situation he had going on, that I get this into the right hands. I initially sent it to a lawyer named Scott King, the Lake County prosecutors, and other places I found on the internet. After checking with King, I wasn't satisfied with his response, so I did some research on five murders during February of 2000 and found out Chris Bynum from Aetna is convicted of these crimes. I asked someone to get his lawyer's information and was given your name and address.
What we can gather from this letter is that back in July of 2014, Gerald Matthews was in trouble. It seems like he was concerned that something was going to happen to him. He was so concerned, in fact, that he decided to write out an affidavit and record a video on a phone. He then packaged the phone and the affidavit up and gave them to Melissa to, quote, get them into the right hands if something happened to him, which, as we know, did just a few weeks later. After Matthews was killed, Melissa says that she sent the contents to the prosecutor's office in Lake County, Indiana. According to the letter, Scott King didn't give her a response that she was happy with, and somehow, she doesn't explain how, she got the package back and did some research. That led her to Chris Bynum, which then led her to Fran Watson. Watson and her team then inspected the materials inside, and what they found was absolutely shocking. On the cell phone contained in the envelope was a video. This is the audio from that recording.
My name is Gerald Terrence Matthews. I'm doing this with hopes of making some of my wrongs right, if that is possible. During back in February of 2000, I committed a crime. I made a mistake, and I couldn't fix it, and now I'm here to clear my conscience. I couldn't turn myself in because I didn't want to go to prison. The worst part is that I hurt people and their families, and I need forgiveness whenever I pass away. My understanding is an innocent man is doing time for what I'm supposed to. I don't know him, but I heard people talking about Chris who killed five people. The only direct people involved with this was me and Robert Carl. He died in a car crash. It was five murders in Aetna. It happened at Amp Ski's house on 10th Ave. Amp, Sheila, and Liz were getting high in the living room, and me and Amp got into it because he tried to play me out of dope I paid for. I pulled my gun on him, but we squashed it, and me and Sheila and Liz left. We went to the field in the back of Aetna to have sex and get high, but when I told Liz I wasn't giving her any more of my dope, she said she would tell the police that I raped her. I got mad at her and hit her with a steering wheel club, and she got out of land. I ran after her. I shot her twice, then shot Sheila. I put the bodies in the car in the bushes and left. I went to Amp Ski House just to tell him to keep quiet about me being with them, but his lady said she would tell Rob G and some other guys were there by this time, and as soon as Rob heard her say something about telling him, he told me to shoot him. That's what I did. It was Amp Ski, his lady, and another white woman. It was a baby on the couch, but nobody heard it. I kicked the lamp over and left. I'm sorry for what I did, and I got an answer to God for it one day. I hope people will find it in their hearts to forgive me. I'm sorry.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Gerald Matthews recorded a video of himself confessing to the murders 25 days before he himself was murdered. Before we dig into an analysis of what was said, I'm going to read to you the affidavit that was also included in the package. It's pretty close to a word-for-word script of what Matthews said in the video. He was clearly reading from it during the recording. But there is one spot where he went off script just a bit. As you're about to hear in the affidavit, he says that Amp and the women were getting high at Amp's house, and then he, Liz, and Sheila left. But in the recording, he added in this part that's not included in the affidavit.
Amp, Sheila, and Liz were getting high in the living room, and me and Amp got into it because he tried to play me out of dope I paid for. I pulled my gun on him, but we squashed it, and me and Sheila and Liz left.
Here's the handwritten affidavit in its entirety. Other than that one change, it's a word-for-word script of what you heard from the video. Quote, "Hi, my name is Gerald Lawrence Matthews. I'm doing this with good hope of making some of my wrongs right, if that's possible. Back during February of 2000, I committed a crime. I made a mistake I couldn't fix, and now I have to clear my conscience. I couldn't turn myself in because I didn't want to go to prison. The worst part is that I hurt people and their family, and I need forgiveness whenever I pass away. My understanding is that an innocent man is doing time I was supposed to. I don't know him, but I've heard people talking about Chris, who killed 5 people. The only people directly involved in this was me and Robert Carr, and he died in a car crash. It was 5 murders in Etna. It happened at Amsky's house on 10th Avenue. Amp, Sheila, and Liz were getting high in the living room, and me, Sheila, and Liz left. We went to the field in the back of Etna to have sex and get high. But when I told Liz I wasn't giving her no money or dope, she said she would tell the police I raped her. I got mad and hit her with a steering wheel club, and she got out and ran. I ran after her and shot her 2 times, then shot Sheila. I put the bodies and the car in the bushes and left. I went to Amsky's house just to tell him to keep quiet about me being with them. But his lady said she would talk. Rob G and some other guys were there by this time. And as soon as Rob heard her say something about telling, he told me to shoot them. That's what I did. It was Amsky, his lady, and another white woman. It was a baby on the couch, but nobody heard it. I kicked the lamp over and left. I'm sorry for what I did, and I got to answer to God for it one day. I hope people will find it in their hearts to forgive me. I'm truly sorry. Signed, Gerald Matthews, July 24th, 2014. Notarized by Talia Caldwell in Lake County, Indiana. End quote. At first glance, this feels like the case has been solved. We have a full confession, both recorded and written out and notarized. In the video, Gerald appears to be in his living room and does not appear to be under any kind of duress. On the surface, there's nothing to cause any concern here. But you know how things work here at Truth and Justice. We never stop at the surface. And even though this confession appears to exonerate Chris, I'm going to do what I always do. Apply the same type of scrutiny and analysis to this confession as we would with any other. There's actually a lot to work with here. The first thing I want to do is analyze the writing itself because I'm pretty certain that Gerald did not physically write this affidavit. I say that for a few reasons. Most notably, the entire thing is written in cursive. In the first sentence, the writer wrote out Gerald's name. So we have a perfect example of how that person writes his name in cursive. It's smooth and flowy. The writer actually puts swooshy tails at the beginning of the T in Terrence and the M in Matthews. They also leave a gap between the W and the S at the end of Matthews. Even though it's in cursive, the letters don't connect. The writer tends to do this a lot with the last letters in words, especially when it's an S. When we compare that to his signature at the bottom of the page, it looks completely different. The G is different, the R is different, the W and the S flow together, and the S is completely different. The signature also looks like it was written slowly and deliberately. He even messed up the D at the end of Gerald and went back and fixed it. Now, we know this whole thing wasn't some kind of forgery because we have the video. So I'm not saying it's fake. What I'm saying is that Gerald had help putting this together. He signed it. He recorded the video. But I don't think he wrote the script slash affidavit. At least, that's my non-expert opinion. So, who wrote the affidavit for Gerald? If I had to guess, I would say a woman. That's not to say there aren't men out there with beautiful handwriting, but the soft and flowy nature of this writing just feels like a woman wrote it to me. But that's honestly just a guess. What I can say is that the writing is not dissimilar to the signature of the notary, Talia Caldwell. Her signature has the same flowy style and the letters lean to the right, just like in the body of the affidavit. So that's a strong possibility. The writer had decent written English skills, but they also write how they speak. We see things like the correct uses of the different spellings of the word there. Quote, Rob G. and some other guys was there, T-H-E-R-E, by this time. And quote, I hope people will find it in their, T-H-E-I-R, hearts to forgive me. Half the people I see on social media can't get that distinction right. But at the same time, the vernacular isn't correct in a lot of places. The previous example, for instance, Rob G. and some other guys was there, and it was a baby on the couch. So it seems like the writer knows how to write, but also wrote this the way someone might talk. And look, I know that seems like I'm nitpicking, but it's more important than you might think. Gerald isn't around anymore to question. So identifying who helped him put this together could answer a lot of questions for us. If I had to make an educated guess, I would say that Gerald probably wasn't the best writer. So he dictated his confession to someone who wrote it down for him. I would say that the affidavit was written as a transcript of the confession after the fact, but it clearly looks like he's reading something in the video, and we have that one spot where the recording doesn't match the script. I think that he may have given the confession to someone who is well-educated. That person wrote it out exactly as he spoke it. That's why we have the bad grammar in places, but the correct uses of the word there and other proper English terms. After that, I think Gerald recorded the video himself reading from that affidavit. So for now, let's put a pin in the writer, because the moment Gerald went off script is also important. When he added in the part about having an argument with Amp before he, Sheila, and Liz left, That didn't come from the document. That came from his own mind. And it fits with the story that Larry and Willie told, that there was an argument and the people left before they returned and killed everyone. That means that Gerald knows this story. He recognized on the fly that there was a part missing, and he added it in. So the question we should be asking ourselves is, how does he know all of these details? Is it because he's telling the truth and this is guilty knowledge? Or is it because someone had fed him the details? Let's take a look at those details that he provided and compare them to the evidence we already have. To begin with, I think we can say with relative certainty that the information provided in the confession did not come from the case file or any media sources. Most of these details were not available to the public in 2014, and if Gerald was just regurgitating from a case file or trial transcripts, he would know everyone's name. In the affidavit, he mentions Liz and Sheila by first name only, and he doesn't appear to know Angela or Suzanne's names. He refers to them as Amp's lady and the other white woman. He also most certainly knew Amp. He doesn't refer to him as Anthony or Amp, but Ampsky, which we learned previously was the nickname he actually went by with his friends. Considering all of that, I'm confident in saying that the information Gerald provided either came from his own personal knowledge or someone with knowledge of what happened shared the information with him. That said, there are several details in the confession that Matthews gets right. Liz was shot twice and Sheila once. Their bodies and the car was moved into the bushes. And the steering wheel club is a critical detail. We discussed months ago that the injury to Liz's head was likely caused by a long, heavy, cylindrical object. We even mentioned a club as a possibility after Tasha told us about the missing club from the car Liz was driving. He mentions two trips to Amp's house, an argument during the first trip, the baby on the couch, the knocked over lamp. He says that Rob Carr was involved, which fits with the affidavits that we covered in the last episode. He got a lot of things right, but not everything. He got a huge detail wrong that no one had considered until we went down the talk screen rabbit hole a couple of weeks ago. In his confession, Matthew says that Amp, Sheila, and Liz were all getting high together during the first trip to Amp's house. We know for a fact that's not true. The only drug in Amp's system was cocaine with no metabolites, which means he had used cocaine for the first time in at least a few days within a minute or two of his death. He did not get high an hour earlier during the first visit. The only drug present in Sheila's tox screen was Darvocet, a prescription medication that she was a chronic user of. Liz had THC present, so she's the only one who could have smoked marijuana during the first visit. She also had cocaine metabolites, but no cocaine in her system, which means that she had used cocaine sometime in the last day or two, but not within the last couple of hours. So I don't know what to think about that part of the confession. It's incorrect, for sure, that much we know. But could it be a mistake? Possibly. If you listen to what he says, it sounds like he's not claiming that he was getting high with Amp, Liz, and Sheila at the house, just that they were getting high when he got there. Is it possible that he just assumed that's what they were doing? Sure. Is it possible that that's just a regular thing for him and he just genuinely doesn't remember all these years later? Also possible. He also, in neither version, says that he actually did get high with Liz and Sheila at the park. He says that they went there to have sex and get high, but never says they actually did do any drugs while they were there. So it's a red flag for sure, but not exactly a deal breaker. More important to me is that big question that I'm always asking. Not what Gerald is saying, but what is he not saying in the confession? Hey everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work. and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pre-game podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Matthews is very clear to say that only he and Robert Carr were, quote, directly involved. Which is convenient, because Carr was already dead at the time and couldn't refute what he was saying. But when you listen to the confession, Carr's only direct involvement was being at the house on the return trip and telling Gerald to shoot everyone. By adding him into the narrative, Matthews fills the void of there being two voices in the house during the murders. Although another inconsistency is that he says that he was alone on the first trip, or at least he doesn't mention anyone else being there with him. But Larry was pretty clear from the very beginning that he heard two voices during the first trip. Matthew says that during the second trip, Rob G and, quote, some other guys were there. But he never says who the other guys were. So what is Gerald not telling us? All we can do is speculate, but based on what we know now, I think there's a good chance someone was deliberately left out of this narrative. What have we heard so far? We have four independent witnesses who all say they have direct knowledge of Shaky McIntosh being involved in these murders. We also learned everyone was scared to death of him. Rob Carr's girlfriend even moved away from the area out of fear. Putting that all together, we have a confusing and complex situation here. Gerald Matthews, a guy who has never been on anyone's radar, suddenly in 2014 decides to swear out this confession in case something happens to him. 3 weeks later, he's shot to death. We have a handwritten affidavit that appears to be written by someone other than himself. It's notarized in Lake County, and Matthews is killed in Lake County shortly after. The package is then mailed with a return address of Indianapolis, but the postmark shows it was mailed from Peru. Indy is over 2 hours away from Gary, and Peru is about half the distance, but in no way on the route between the two. Indy is southeast of Gary, and Peru is directly north, about an hour from Indianapolis. And the situation gets even more complicated. Previous investigators and attorneys had the same thought that I have. If Matthews is dead, then let's talk to the notary to find out what the hell was going on. But she has never responded to anyone's request to speak with her. She's gone completely dark. So I decided a few weeks ago to go another route. The package was mailed by Melissa Williams. She should have been easy to track down since she put her return address on the envelope. But when I looked her up, she's a ghost. There's no record of Melissa or anyone by that last name living at that house, ever. In fact, I was able to pull the property records, and I know who owned the house at the time. It's no one with any connection to a Melissa Williams. And this isn't a rental property. The address comes back to a very nice house in an upscale subdivision. It appears that the name is fake. And I'd say the address is fake, but it's too specific to be just made up. It's a real house in a real neighborhood. And yet the package was mailed from a post office over an hour north of the address. So, as of right now, we're left with the confession of a dead man who names another dead man as being directly involved. He knows a lot of details that someone in the general public shouldn't have known, but also gets a few details wrong. We don't know who wrote the affidavit. The notary is MIA, and the person who delivered the materials to the attorney is a ghost. So now you see what I mean when I say I have a lot of investigative work to do on this case outside of producing podcast episodes. So what prompted all this? Was it truly a simple case of a guilty conscience? Maybe, but the timing, the details, and omissions are all suspect to me. Think back to our last episode. We learned that starting in 2010, Chris's attorneys and investigators were on the streets asking questions. By 2014, they were working hard to build their case so they could file an appeal. Then, suddenly, Gerald Matthews swears out a confession that implicates himself and a dead man that was already the focus of the ongoing investigation. 3 weeks later, Matthews is dead, and the people doing the investigating get a clear and simple solution to their case. A narrative that fits everything they've learned about these murders, minus one key detail. Shaky McIntop. So, what happened here? I'm not going to claim to know, but I'm also not going to bullshit you and pretend that I don't have a theory. I could see something like this happening. Within a day of the murders occurring, innocent Chris Bynum is charged and later convicted. If Shaky was actually responsible, he was off the hook. And for over a decade, he was free and clear. But then the Innocence Clinic at Indiana University started poking around in the case. Witness after witness starts implicating Shaky. Word starts getting around on the street that the lawyers are narrowing in on him and Rob. Rob is dead, so Shaky has no one to threaten into taking the fall for him. What if somehow Gerald Matthews did have some kind of connection? Or at least he knew something about the murders. He's in Gary, and according to the letter in the confession package, he was in a situation that he thought might result in his death. Again, to be clear, I'm not saying that this is what happened, just a theory. But I could see Shaky forcing Matthews into inserting himself into Shaky's role in the murders, having him connect all the dots, give crime scene details not available to the public, and even name Rob Carr so the story fits with the stories that are being told to the investigators. Then, once the confession is secured, Shaky kills Matthews. The confession is delivered, and the investigation turns from Shaky and Rob to Gerald and Rob. The big question is, how does Gerald Matthews connect to any of this prior to confessing? Remember back to what I said a long time ago. Based on Larry Brooks' deposition, when we heard directly from him and not the manipulated story created by the police, he said that he did know a Chris who was friends with Amp, a Chris with a big gap in his front teeth. I said then that I think the name Chris did come up early in the investigation. It just wasn't our Chris. But one look at Gerald Matthews' picture will send shivers right up your spine. Unlike our Chris, Gerald Matthews has a massive gap between his front teeth, just like Larry described. And we can tell from his confession that he knew Amp very well. He doesn't call him Anthony or Amp, but Ampsky, the name that his friends called him. And there's more. In Matthews' background report, we find an arrest record and court documents from a 2001 misdemeanor. He was arrested 10 months after the murders for carrying a handgun without a license. And in those documents, we learn that Gerald Matthews didn't go by Gerald Matthews in the early 2000s. The docket lists two names for him: his government name, Gerald Terrence Matthews, and the name that everyone knew him by, Chris Stokes. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team: Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kate Woodyomnik, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.